Okay, so in the last session we looked at the evaluation of semantic sequence using truth tables. What we haven't done at the moment is looked at evaluating syntactic sequence. Now, those of you who think that we can probably do syntactic sequence by means of truth tables, you're absolutely right. But really, you shouldn't. Syntactic sequence are a deeper level of formalization. And then it's not defined in terms of truth and falsehood. And so actually, the truth tables shouldn't be used to evaluate syntactic sequence. And I'm going to show you another way of evaluating syntactic sequence, and that's by Tableau, or sometimes people call them truth trees. So the difference between semantic and can anyone tell me the difference to look at? How would you know whether a sequence is a syntactic or a semantic sequence? That's right. The Turnstile would be a single one if it's a syntactic sequence, and a double one if it's that's a syntactic sequence, and that's a semantic sequence. That's how you know the difference. And what did I say? Semantic, syntactic. Oh, right. Okay, let me start again. Semantic, syntactic. Okay, so that's defined in terms of truth and possibility. So we say, whenever we see that, we say that the claim being made by this sequence is that there is no possible structure or row on a truth table in which all the formulae to the left-hand side of this sign are true and the formulae to the right-hand side are false. That's how we define that. Whereas this one is defined in terms of the set consisting of those formulae, and the negation of that formulae is closed. It generates a closed tableau, and I'm going to show you what that means today. So semantic sequence, the double turnstiles, are defined in terms of truth and falsehood, and we test them. So the claim is there's no possible structure in which all the formulae to the left are true and the formulae to the right are false, and you can see how truth tables show you if there is a sequence in which all the formulae to the left are true and the formulae to the right are false, you will find it with the truth table. Because you'll look down the sequence, you'll look down the rows, and if there's anything with all the T's to the right, an F to the right, that's a counter example. You put a cross in under the sequence there. And syntactic sequences are not defined like that, because the argument claim made by a syntactic sequence is that the set consisting of those formulae and the negation of that formulae generates a closed tableau. So we're not mentioning truth and falsehood. How could that claim be tested in a truth table? So that's really why you shouldn't test syntactic sequence with a truth table. And believe me, tableau are much easier than truth tables. But you're not going to think that for at least an hour. I hope you might think it after an hour. Okay, the semantic sequence, if P then Q, P syntactic, the semantic sequence Q is interpreted, there's no logically possible, we've done all this, okay, there's no logically possible situation in which all the formulae on the left-hand side of the sequence are true and those on the right-hand side false. And you saw yesterday how we used truth tables to test that. This sequence is interpreted, the set, and the little curly brackets there make a set, P arrow Q, P and not Q, see we put a negation sign in front of Q, is closed. So this set, if P then Q, P then not Q. Okay, so the same is true here. P arrow Q, P not Q is a counter example set for the sequence above. So a counter example set you get by just putting all the formulae on the left hand side just as they are and then adding the negation of whatever is on the right hand side. So it's by generating a tableau or a tree from the counterexample that we see whether or not the sequence is correct. Because what you'll see is what it means for a tableau to be closed. So the tableau generated by the counterexample set is closed, and that's what you're going to learn. So tableaux are always generated from the counterexample set of the sequence being evaluated. And the counterexample set of an argument consists of the premises of the argument plus the negation of its conclusion. And if you're thinking, why is she talking about arguments, you're quite right, because I really should be talking about sequence, shouldn't I? Because we've got rid of the argument in favour of a sequence. So it should be the counterexample set of a sequence consists in the formulae to the left-hand side plus the negation of the formula to the right-hand side. So if your formalised argument is that, then the counterexample is that. And notice I've put it down the page here. Unless you put the curly brackets on to show it's a set, the counterexample set you should be putting down the page, because that's the set from which you generate the sequence. And you'll see that we need to be down the page for that. So the sequence goes across the page, the counterexample set goes down the page. So, in drawing a tableau, we take each formula of the counterexample set and we represent its truth conditions according to the rules of propositional logic. And as we generate the tableau, we see the combination of these truth conditions, and that enables us to decide whether or not the sentences of the counterexample set are contradictory or not, or consistent or not. A set of sentences is consistent if and only if, and remember that's not a misspelling, there is a logically possible situation in which all are true together. Okay, this will make more sense when I show you a tableau, so we might come back to that point. Okay, so if an argument is valid, its counterexample set will be consistent. Can you see that?
Inconsistent.
Inconsistent, you're absolutely right. So, an argument is valid. Who can give me the definition of validity? Is everyone else trying to avoid my eye? What are you going to say?
There's no possible occasion when the on the left side of the formula can be true and the right side isn't true.
You're getting there. That's not the definition of validity, that's the definition of a semantic sequence. So an argument is valid if and only if there is no
situation, but if the premises are true, the conclusion is false.
Say it again.
There's no situation in which, if the premises are true, the conclusion is false.
Okay, except you should have put logically possibly possible in there. So an argument is valid if and only if there is no logically possible situation in which its premises are true and its conclusion false. And of course, in making a counterexample set, what you're doing is you're putting the set of the premises and the negation of the conclusion. Now, that set ought to be inconsistent if the argument's valid, isn't it? Because if there's no situation where the premises are true and the conclusion is false, i.e. the negation of the conclusion is true, then that set ought to be inconsistent, i.e. such that there is no logically possible situation in which all those sentences are true together. So if an argument is valid, its counterexample set will be inconsistent, and you're going to find that I'll warn you now, because I've taught this for many, many, many years, and it always happens. I tell people this and they forget, because you think validity is nice, consistency is nice. Therefore, valid and consistent go together. But that's not the case. If an argument is valid, its counterexample set will be inconsistent for the reasons I've just told you. Similarly, if an argument is invalid, then its counterexample set will be consistent. Because for a set of sentences to be consistent, is for there to be a logically possible situation in which they're all true together. Well, if there's a logically possible situation in which the sentences of the counterexample set are all true together, it shows the argument must have been invalid.
I struggle with that one a bit, I must admit. Well, it doesn't seem blindingly obvious.
like the first
it one. It is blindingly obvious. It is as blindingly obvious as the first one, because the counter example set is the set consisting in the premises plus the negation of the conclusion. And if an argument is valid only if there's no possible situation in which the premises are all true and the conclusion false, if that set's consistent, i.e. such that they could all be true together, so the negation of the conclusion is true at the same time as all the premises, then that is a possible situation in which the premises are all true and the conclusion is false, isn't it?
Okay.
So if the counterexample set is consistent, the argument is invalid. So the tableau tells us whether the counterexample set is consistent or not. So the tableau generated by a counterexample set is closed if all its branches are closed. You don't know what a branch is yet. So a branch of a tableau is closed if and only if it contains a simple formula, for example P, and its negation, not P. Or if it contains Q and not Q, or R and not R, and so on. Because given that we're assuming bivalence, do you remember I said that in classical logic, which is what you're being taught here, it always assumes that a sentence is either true or false. There's no third truth value, and there's no truth value gap. So if a sentence isn't true, it's false. And if it isn't false, it's true. So if there's a formula and its negation within a tableau, we can close that as being contradictory. We have failed to draw a situation where all the sentences are consistent with each other. Here's an obvious situation where they're not consistent with each other. Again, don't forget, I'm going to show you all this in a minute, and so this will start to...
Is that the only case that you can close?
Yes. If you can only close the tableau if there's a formula and its negation in it. I will add to that later on, but not just now. There is another situation, but it is in effect the same situation, but we come at it in another way, and you really don't need to know that now. So we'll forget that problem. So note that P and not P give us a structural way of determining inconsistency. So consistency is defined in terms of truth again, and I'm saying that we've got rid of truth. I'm explaining it to you in terms of consistency and truth, because otherwise you won't understand it. But it's this structural inconsistency. Computers can recognise that. You know, if you have the symbol P and the symbol not P, the computer knows that that's not possible. So, actually, we don't need to talk about truth or falsehood at all. And if you had time to really get into the language of the proposition of propositional logic, you would find you wouldn't have to mention truth or falsehood. So, can you create counterexamples for the following sequence? So, what do I do with this one in order to create the counterexample? Put your hand up when you've got the answer. Right up so I can see you. Werner?
Not P on the left hand side.
That's right. You take out the sequence and you put not P, and that's the counterexample set. And of course, you'd run it down the page instead of across. Good. Okay, what's the next one? You're putting your hand up, Sean, or you're scratching your ear? Mary?
Well, I've put my hand up.
Sorry. No, you're scratching your ear, so you're too late now. Mary, what would you put here?
On the right.
Okay, you get rid of the sequence, and actually you put not R, but that is actually R, so yes. You can put R if you like. If you were an undergraduate, I'd stop you doing that, and the reason I'd stop you doing that is that the computer program that I would send you to practice on would only recognise not R there, because it's very pedantic. It goes through, you've got to go through all the rules. It's only a computer program. So can you see that you'd negate the conclusion which is already a negation, so it's not R, you'd put not R, and of course because of bivalence, not R is in fact R. Okay, what about the last one? Stephen?
Same as the first one, not P.
Good. Take away the sequence, put not P, and run it down the page. Good. Okay, you've all got the idea of
So when you put not R, is that really just pedantry, or are there situations in which not R actually crawls out of the woodwork as being something a bit different?
Not in classical logic. In classical logic, we assume bivalence, which is that if it isn't true, it's false, and if it isn't false, it's true. There's no third truth value, no third possibility.
Yes. So that pedantry is used because later on, when you get into fuzzy logic, or
any system, fuzzy logic is one of them, and also intuitionism. So any logic that doesn't have the rule not P is P.
When you set your students up with this pedantry, what you're doing is preparing them for a world in which bivalency isn't assumed. You're setting them up with a language that doesn't assume.
Well, no, what I'm setting up for is the computer program which is pedantic. There is a program, you'd be able to use it if you're on the Oxford system. Actually, you can get into it from Google.
If it's Tableau 3, then yes.
Yes, you've got into it from Google, haven't you? So there's something called Tableau 3, let me tell you now, which is the University of Oxford's teaching tool for its undergraduates. And you can go to it, and you've got to have a certain... you've got to take it, download an applet or something, haven't you?
I didn't.
I had to, because it's just gone from
I'm
my
not using it fully, so maybe there's...
If you're going to do the Tableau, you do have to use that.
It looked like it was fully functional.
But it'll give you not only tutorials on everything I've told you over this weekend, but it'll also give you sequence and it'll allow you to apply the rules. But it's very fiddly and it's very pedantic, but it's extremely useful. Because you can mechanically, it won't let you. It tells you your mind's numbingly stupid if you get one of the rules wrong. Undergraduates love that. You might find it a bit rude.
just out of slight curiosity, are we going to develop not P?
Well, what do you think not P means?
Well, that's not P. In our calculations that we're going to do later, are we going to build up sequences of knots?
Not like that, no. This would be a bit pointless, wouldn't it? It's so obvious.
We are going to build up sequences, but not like that.
There'd be a rule that any two knots would be... If you do a calculation, you get rid of it. So you'd never have a third one, never.
When we generate a tableau, what we're doing is testing the set of sentences consisting of the premises and the negation of the conclusion to see if there's a logically possible situation in which they're all true together. That's what we're doing. Yawn. Okay, so consistency means invalidity and inconsistency means validity. That's the counterintuitive thing. Once we've created the counterexample set, our next task is to generate the tableau. And we do this following the tableau rules of propositional logic. These rules are generated by the truth table definitions of the truth functors. So, just as, if you remember, when we got the truth table definitions, I said that this was a definition because it captures all the conditions, the truth conditions, all the logically possible conditions under which this is true and it's false. The tableau rules do the same thing. So here we've got P and Q, and here's the truth table set up as always: true, false, true, false, true, true, false, false, and where P is true and Q is true, P and Q are true. where P is true and Q is false, P and Q is false. Do you remember? We did this yesterday. So where P is false and Q is true, P and Q is false again. And where they're both false, it's false again. So that's a truth table definition of AND. And this is the tableau rule for AND. And the tableau rule tells us that this is true in the world where one world where both P and Q are true. So you've got a branch on the tableau and P and Q on the same branch. Okay, and you can see how that would... So it's true when these two are true and false otherwise. And let's just do the next one and give you a feel for it. So this is the rule for Bell, the disjunction. So the disjunction where P and Q are both true, P or Q is also true. Where true, P is true and Q is false, P or Q is also true. Where P is false and Q is true, P or Q is also true. And it's only false, in fact, where they're both false. Okay? Now that's represented on the tableau rules as a branching rule, and you've got P on one side and Q on the other. And I know that you're all thinking, why isn't there a third branch with P and Q on it? Okay, can anyone tell me why there isn't a third branch with P and Q on it?
You only need P or Q to be true. You don't need both to be true.
Well, except it is true when both are true.
But you don't need both to be true.
Good. That's right. Because actually this enables me to put either Q or not Q on here. Mm-hmm. And this enables me to put either P or not P on there. So in fact, we've captured the truth conditions of that in a branching rule just with P on one side and Q on the other side. And I see somebody has written on this screen. Isn't that appalling? Not from you, it isn't. Okay, so the rules, you can get to the rules of the tableau rules from the truth table definitions, which, if you think about it, isn't surprising, they are the same thing. So on page 20 of your handout booklet, you'll find all the rules, and you'll also find the incorrect rule. So, okay, I haven't put the truth table definition in, but you've got that earlier in your handbook if you want to check out each against the other. Right, okay, I haven't put the rules down, but if you look in your handout booklet, which is, where's the error, which page is the error on? Okay, so if you look at page 20, you'll see that the tableau rules are all put there. There's the negation rule, the conjunction rule, the negated conjunction rule, and so on. But in the negated conditional, this is actually the negation rule. So if you have something like this, it's a stick rule, not a branch rule, comes down, and you have P and not Q. Okay, so let's do a very simple tableau together. So, would you like to produce the counterexample set for that tableau? Okay, counterexample set. Here it is. Everyone have it down the page?
No.
Bad girl.
I know, I'm told I was going to struggle with
it. So what we've done is we've put both the formulae on the left-hand side of the sequence, and then we've negated the formulae on the right-hand side of the sequence and put them down the page. That's the counterexample set of the sequence with which we started. Okay, so the second step, we start applying the rules. Now here, you can't apply a rule to this or this because they're both simple formula. That's actually not simple, it's negated. But because it's only a one negation, it's considered a simple formula. You can't analyse these any further. But that one you can analyse, you can apply a rule to it. So there's only one rule to apply, it's the rule for the conditional. Tell me whether it's a stick or a branch. Put your hand up if you have the answer. Till everyone has their hands up, I'm not going to let you speak to me. Is it a stick or a branch? The rule for the conditional. Okay, this is a stick and this is a branch. See, this is a stick.
So a stick means it must be, and a branch is options. So,
well, yes. Here there's only one world.
Well,
give us the truth conditions. Here we need two worlds to give us the truth conditions. Okay, Mary, is it a stick or a branch? It's a branch. Good. Okay, so here we go. The conditional rule is a branching rule, and if you thought doing the formatting on truth tables was awful, this formatting was just terrible. I was tearing my hair out, so I hope you appreciate it. So, okay, we've got it's a branching rule, not a stick rule. What goes on the left-hand branch? What do I put on the left-hand branch here? Put your hands up when you know, so I can see. Okay, right up, so I can see who's got it. Okay. So what goes on the... So look at the... this is not rocket science. All you're doing is looking at the rule on page 20 or 21, and you'll be able to tell me what goes on the left-hand branch. Okay, Sam.
Not P.
Not P. Okay, so we've got not P on one branch. Good. That's, there we go. So we put the negation of the antecedent. So we have a conditional here. We put the negation of the antecedent on the right-hand side. And what do we put on the left-hand side? Oh, I'm sorry, there was some. We now have a branch in which we find both P and not P. Okay, so the not P that's generated from that is inconsistent with the P that's the second. So we can actually close that. That is a failed attempt to produce a possible situation in which all the sentences are true together. So we can close that off. So that is not a possible situation. And we show that by closing the branch. So that's a closed branch. This is not yet a closed tableau because we still have an open branch. But it's a closed branch. It's a failed attempt to draw a situation where the premises and the negation of the conclusion are all true together. Everyone understand that? Yeah? Okay, now what should I put on the right-hand branch?
Q.
Q. Good. So on the right-hand branch goes is Q. Here we are. But, look, we've got not Q and Q, so we close that as well. Another failed attempt to draw a possible situation in which the premises and the negation of the conclusion are all true together. So, we now have a closed tableau, not just a closed branch, but a closed tableau. We've run out of branches, they're all closed. And what that tells us is that the argument is...
Valid.
That's right. The sequence is correct. The argument is valid because the counterexample is inconsistent. So, okay, do you see we have a closed tableau there? Good. Okay. So our completed tableau tells us that every attempt to draw a possible situation in which the sentences of the counterexample set are all true together has failed. So each rule, application of the rule, is a representation of the truth conditions of that sentence. So if we look at the... no, I'm not going to bother you with that. Let's just mechanically do the rules. Sentences of the counterexample set are inconsistent, so the argument claim is... No, the argument claim is... No.
Valid.
Correct. And the argument is valid. That's right. Yeah. Oh, true. I thought. Okay. You can have true, as I've said. Have true.
You said earlier on that when you're doing the syntactic
terms, it doesn't alter. No, it doesn't. But I mean, when you're teaching it,
okay,
it's much easier to use the word true. So what you what's actually saying is the set consisting of that and the negation of that is closed.
Yes.
But the impact of that is that you know that the argument is valid. Okay, so let's do a complex sequence. Now, here's a nice one, isn't it? So here's a complex sequence. Will you all write down the counter example, please? Why is the arrow in between? Ah, here, you mean?
And the first one.
Okay. Now, what we've got here is much more complex formulae than anything you've dealt with before. The scope, do you remember yesterday we talked about the importance of brackets and how brackets disambiguate things? What brackets tell us is the scope of all the truth functors, the truth functional connectives. So here, which is the scope of this arrow? Just P and Q, because the arrow's here around this. But what's the scope of this arrow?
So everything that's in the...
That, so this is saying, if that, then that. Are you with me? Because the brackets pertaining to this arrow are which ones?
The outer
ones, exactly so. So the scope of this conjunction is that, scope of that conditional is that, and the scope of this conditional is that. Okay? And can you tell me here, what's the scope of this disjunction? R and T, because the brackets are here. And the scope of this conditional?
Not P and not S.
Not P and not F. Okay. What's the scope of this conditional?
The outer brackets.
So this is in effect saying that if R or T, then if not P, then not S. So if R or T, then if not T, then not S. That's what's saying. And you would be able to read that all yourself as long as you understand the import of the brackets. So this argument claim is, if P then Q, then S and R. If R or T, then if not P, then not S. Together entail P. Okay? So there's no possible situation in which those two formulae are true and that formula is false, or, as this is a syntactic sequence, the sets consisting of that formula, and the negation of that formula is closed.
That's going to be a 32-line truth table if you did it that
well,
way.
Which is why we really don't want to do a truth table of that, because we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sentence letters, and that would generate a 32-line truth table. Can you imagine how boring that's going to be? Whereas this is actually going to be reasonably simple. Okay, so have you all done the counterexample?
Yes. 64-line.
Is it 64-line? Too many, anyway. Far too many. Okay, so let's create a counterexample set. Have we done that? Here it is.
16.
Okay, so the formula 1, formula 2, and the negation of the conclusion formula. Okay, so we've got to apply the rules to the formulae of this counterexample set. Now, it actually doesn't matter in which order you apply the rules, to which formulae you apply the rules first, but actually, we want a manageable truth table, and some ways of doing it might generate a truth table that has too many branches, and you really don't want one with 6 different branches if you could possibly avoid it. As you gain in experience, you'll start to see which rules that you can apply first to keep the truth table manageable. But you're not in a position to be able to do that at the moment, obviously. And you've got to apply all the rules to all the formulae, so just keep going. Obviously, I'm going to guide you in doing this. So in applying the truth table rules to a formula, you apply them to the truth functor with the smallest scope first. Do you remember when yesterday we did the not T arrow Q, or not P arrow Q, we did the not, the scope of which was just the P first, and then did the conditional. Well, we do it the other way round on for a tableau. We apply them to the truth function of the largest scope. I'll show what you mean. So, I've labelled each of the formulae so that we can track the way through down this. So, looking only at Formula 1, which is the truth functor with the largest scope in Formula 1? Which is the, so there are three truth functors, aren't there, in that formula? Yeah. There are two conditionals and a conjunction. Which is the one with the largest scope? The second conditional, that's right, because the scope of the conjunction is just the S and R. The scope of that conditional is just the P and Q. And the scope of that conditional is the whole formula. You with me? So that's the rule that we apply first. So we're looking, this is a conditional rule. Is it a stick or a branch?
Why do we
keep
level 1 and not the second row?
Okay, I explained this a minute ago. Who can tell me why I've picked number 1 and not number 2? Why am I applying the rules to number 1 and not number 2 to start with?
One simpler.
Because I know that it's going to generate a simpler tableau. You're not in a position to really know that yet. If you'd rather do 2 first, you can do 2 first. Actually, it's not going to make that much difference with this. It's completely arbitrary which one you do first. And I think I chose number 1 just because it was number 1 in this case. Okay, so looking at number 1, forget the other formulae completely for the moment. Looking at number 1, what's the rule? Is it a stick rule or a branch rule? Is it a stick or a branch? A stick or a branch?
Branch.
It's a branch. All conditionals are branching rules. So, there I've put the branching in. And what do I put on which branch? Now, work that out for yourself. Then put your hands up when you've got it. Don't forget, you're blind to the complexity. All you're doing is following the rules at the moment. Okay, Dermot, what goes on the left-hand branch?
Not being
not, sorry,
sorry, not Peter, not that first bracket.
Good, yes, that's right. That first formula, but negated, is what you mean. Yeah, good, well done. You said not P and Q, no, but that's not an and, is it? So that was wrong. And I knew you meant, but I had to get you to say the right thing. Okay, so I've taken this out, I've given both actually. So branch rule, and on the first side is the negation of the antecedent of that formula, and on the other side is just the consequent as it is. And you said here, so 1, 2, and 3 are the sets of the counterexample set. Okay, 4, this line of 4, is the result of applying the conditional rule to formula 1. Okay, so you can go back and track through how we've done this later on. Okay, so you see that we're completely ignoring formula 2 and 3 at the moment. We're just doing formula 1, and it's a conditional. The overall form of that, of formula 1, is a conditional, and what we're doing is it's a branch rule, and on the left-hand side we put the negation of the antecedent of the conditional, and on the right-hand side we put just the consequence of the conditional. And that gives us our second lot of formulae. So the formula at 4 were achieved by applying the conditional rule to formula 1. Okay? So, our next task is to apply the rules to the formulae generated. I mean, we could now ignore this and just go on to that, but then you're working with two branches, and really you want to try and keep you won't be able to do this, but you want as few branches as possible, and you'll see why in a minute. So our next task is to apply the rules to these formulae, the two formulae generated by formula 1. both the left hand and the right hand branch. So what's the overall form of this formula? A what?
Branch.
No, I asked what the overall form of this formula is.
Negated conditional.
It's a negated conditional. Okay, very important, it's negated. It's not just the conditional, it's a negated conditional. We don't use the conditional rule on that, we use the negated conditional rule, which is different. Okay, is it a stick or a branch? It's a stick, isn't it? The negated conditional rule. What do we put here then? P and not Q, that's right, on a stick, P and not Q. And what's the overall form of this formula? It's a conjunction, that's right. Is that a stick or a branch?
Stick.
It's a stick again, and we put on it S and R, good. Okay. So, I don't know, so there, I've put... Now notice I didn't get as far as putting the not Q on there, because the minute I put the P there, it's inconsistent, and I can close it. Okay, so that's good, we're left with one branch, which is even better. So I put S and R here, and I've only got one branch open. And what I would do normally is tick Formula 1. The reason I didn't do it is because I was getting so fed up with the bloody thing. Tick Formula 1 to show that it's done, and tick both formulas on level 4 to show that those are done, which means that we still know that we haven't yet done Formula 2. Okay, so, and I put here, okay, we've now got level 5, and these branches come from applying the negated conditional rule to the left-hand branch of 4. Okay, that one, the negated conditional rule to the left-hand branch, and the conjunction rule to the right-hand branch. Okay, see where we're getting all these things from. You're going to have to go back and work through this for yourself, obviously.
So you don't need to close both branches, as long as you close one branch, that's...
Well, I can't close that branch. There's no contradiction in there, is there? We've got the only simple formulae that we've got on there is not P, S and R, and so far those are entirely consistent,
aren't
they?
Because you've got one closed branch, it's sufficient to tick Formula 1.
I'm ticking Formula 1 not because there's a branch closed, but because I've applied all the rules to Formula 1. Okay. Once I've applied the conditional rule to Formula 1 and got these two, I can tick off Formula 1. Once I've applied the rules to these two, I can tick off both these two. So I tick off a formula once I've applied the rules to it. So, okay, so we've got two stick rules, that branch closes, the formula on the right-hand branch is a conjunction, which is another stick rule, okay, and that's where we are. So, we have now got to go back to, oh, I have ticked it, green, can you see a green tick up there?
Gosh.
But there should also be a green tick there and a green tick there. So, we need to apply the rule to Formula 2 now. So looking only at Formula 2, we can forget Formula 1. What's the overall form of Formula 2? The overall form of Formula 2, i.e. which is the truth functor with the largest scope?
Conditional.
It's the conditional. Which conditional? There are two conditionals.
Conditional.
The first conditional is that one, isn't it? And why is that? Because the scope of the bell, the disjunction, is those two, and the scope of that negation is P, and that negation is S, and the scope of that conditional is not P, not S, and the scope of that is the whole formula. Okay? So we apply the conditional rule to that formula, a stick or a branch. Conditional rule, is that a stick or a branch?
Branch.
It's a branch. So, see, there we are. It's a conditional rule, and we've got the branch. So we're opening up another branch again, which is a bit of an irritant, but never mind, there's nothing we can do about it. So which formula do we put on the left-hand side of this branch? Put your hands up when you've got the answer, so you can give other people a chance to get it. So which formula are we putting? So we're doing Formula 2. It's a branching rule, a conditional rule. What's the formula we put on the left-hand side?
Branch. R bell T?
R bell T. Well, is it?
Not R.
That's right. Because the antecedent is negated in according to the conjunction rule. That's right. So I think. Oh, well, I don't. So what do we put, if you weren't quick enough to see, what do we put on the right-hand branch?
If not P, then not S.
The whole of that formula, just exactly as it is, we just put the condition, the consequence. So here is the result of that, not R del T, but just the consequence there. So 6, which is this level, has come from applying the conditional rule to Formula 2. So you can go back and check all what we've been, all the working is available here. Good, okay. Now, those are both complex, so there's no closing anything here, because you can't close, as long as a formula is complex, it can't be used to close anything. So we've got to apply the rules to that and to that. Okay, so let's do... what's the overall form of this formula, a not bell or not negated disjunction? Is it a stick or a branch? It's a stick, that's right. Think of the English here. It's not R or T. That means it's both not R and not T, doesn't it? Mm. It's not R or T becomes, it's neither R nor T. So that's a stick, and you've got not R and not T on the same stick. Good. Mm. What's the overall form of this formula, stick or a branch?
Branch.
It's a conditional again, isn't it? And what goes on the left-hand side of the branch?
Not.
The negation of the antecedent, so it's not P. That's right. And what goes on the right-hand branch? Not Chris.
Not S.
That's right. Exactly. The consequence goes on the branch. Okay.
Oh, sorry, I've got mixed up in the trees. Which is a stick and which is a branch?
That's a stick, and that's a branch.
Oh yes, indeed. But when do I use them?
You look at the rules on the all the rules I've given you on page 20 and 21.
Oh right.
And that will tell you whether it's a stick or a branch. So, that's a stick rule and that's a branch rule, and you've already worked it out, so there you are. We can put not R and not T should go there, and not P and not S. But, have you noticed something important? You can close that one. You've got R and not R on that branch, so that's closed.
You've got P and not P on the next one.
You've got not P and not P on that one. Okay, so you can close that one off. And you've got S and not S on that one. So actually, at that level, we can close the lot.
Marianne,
so all the branches are closed. The argument claim is... correct or true?
Valid.
And the argument is
valid.
Not done.
Marianne, could you do any manipulation on the not R or T? Does that come out to not R and not T?
Yes. Straight away? If you look at the negated disjunction rule, so R or T becomes not R and not T.
Yes.
But the minute you write not R there, you close it. Why bother putting the not T in? Although, you know, if you do, it doesn't matter. As long as you go back and then see that in each of these branches is a failed attempt. So each time we apply a rule, what we're doing is we're representing the truth conditions, the conditions under which these formulae are true and false. And by putting them all together, we're trying to find out whether there are any conditions in which all the formulae are true together. And we failed. There isn't such a situation here. Each branch has closed, and so we know that the set is inconsistent, and that therefore the argument that generated the set is valid.
Can you just...
Yes.
Branch 5, why did you close it off?
Why did I close that one?
Because
there's not P up there. So from 1, that's the counter example, set 1, 2 and 3. And from formula 1, we generated a branching, by a branching rule, the conditional rule, those two. And then by the not conditional, we generated that, and that contradicts that. Okay? That contradicts that. So there isn't an open branch.
So when you do the sort of breakdown, it looks as though there's sort of a hierarchical decomposition, but it's not. When you get down to tilde bracket R tilde T bracket, that branching is stemming from equation 2.
Wait, when you say this branch, do you mean this branching?
Yes, that branching. Okay. It's stemming from equation 2.
From formula 2,
formula 2, yeah. But it is diagrammed as though it was stemming from linearly the IS, not the IS, a single
SR. But that's because this gives us, at 4, we've shown the possible worlds in which formula 1 is true.
Indeed.
So formula 1, there are two possible worlds consistent with that being true. That's the first world, that's the second world. So both of these are complex, so we've then got to apply the rules to those, and we discover that that actually isn't a world in which formula 1 is true consistently with formula 3. And that's still a world, formula 1, this is a world, one world in which formula 1 is true. So if you think about the English again, if P then Q, then S or R, that's true in the world where not P and S and R.
I have no quarrel with the logic and the analysis, but diagrammatically, that is representing the formula equation 2 as though it was descending from a branch out of equation.
And the reason for that is we want to check these truth conditions of all these formula against each other. Each branch is an attempt to draw a possible world where those three formula are true together.
But there is...
So we've got to combine... So just as in the truth table, we combine the truth values of all the formulae. So in the tableau, we're also combining the truth values of all the formulae, but we're doing it differently. We're doing it according to tableau rules instead of the truth table rules.
But unless you write some description, as you have done on the left, to show, for example, that the decomposition is coming from a certain area, it's inconsistent with any other decompositions where you have a tree structure. It's not a tree structure.
It's almost like a grafted fruit tree, isn't it, where you've got the rootstock is different from the...
I've lost that. I think I understand what you're...
If you've got the line, tilde bracket R vel T bracket...
Tilde.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you take that line, horizontal line, horizontally... across there, that line does not descend from the R above it.
That comes from formula 2.
All the other analytical
tricks
I do, you have a linkage to show the hierarchical decomposition.
This, what we're trying to do, I'm going to have to stand on this. What we're trying to do is to show how whether there's any possible situation in which formulas 1, 2 and 3 are true together. So we've got to look at the truth conditions, the conditions of truth and falsity of that formula, together with the truth and falsity conditions of that formula, together with the truth and falsity conditions of that formula. So what we're doing is first we're getting the truth conditions of that formula. There are two possible worlds in which that's true, and this is a description of each of them, and we get that down to individual sentences, single sentences. Okay, so that, by this point, we've completely represented the truth conditions of that. and we see that there's an inconsistency between Formula 1 and Formula 3. This is not a possible world in which Formulas 1 and 3 are true together. But, so far, this is still a possible world in which Formulas 1, 2 and 3 are true together. This hasn't been closed off. So, we now want to get out the truth conditions of Formula 2, and there are two possible worlds in which Formula 2 is true. So we generate from that tableau, because we want to combine the truth conditions of Formula 2 with the truth conditions of Formula 1. So we generate the tableau from for Formula 2 from the branch of Formula 1, and that's what we get. Are you with it?
I think the thing is here that you can apply the rules to either 1, 2 or 3 in any order you like. You choose the best order you think is going to work out the best way. And all you're doing is you're adding on your analysis of Formula 2 at that point there.
But if you're adding it to the parent-child relationship,
maybe there is some way of written into that. You could add a way of it.
Why do you want to... What do you mean by parent-child relationship?
You are doing an analysis of a relationship where you get that line of your talk.
So what do you mean by the parents?
Two is the parent of the next step
of that. Yes, that's right.
Now, there is no visual representation of that parent.
Yes, there is.
Where?
It's because here, the stem of the tree is here. Those three formula there are the counterexample, 1, 2, and 3. 4 is the level of ones coming out, the truth conditions of 1. 5, I think that's 5, is it, or 6, is 2 coming out. So the parent is actually better seen as those three, not as any one of those.
I think I know what you're saying, because in an organizational chart, I'm thinking with you, it's not flowing from R, it's flowing from Scoops. But in an organizational chart, you'd read that as...
It's flowing from these three, not from R.
If it's a more complex representation of situation, then I think you need parent-child relationships. Mm-hmm. Now, you do in any hierarchical breakdown, which is that...
It's not a hierarchy. I'm a bit worried about what you mean. There's no hierarchy. I'm not doing that because it's important to do number one first.
Something descends from something else. If you start with, you've got line two.
But you think that that's descending. Yeah. This is all these lines here, all these branches here, is descending from that counterexample set.
If you didn't come with the context, that's what you'd think, is that it descends.
I have to say, I don't really understand the objection. That is true.
It's just visually. I'm with him. I don't believe in hierarchy, but it's visually. If you had sort of 19 points all the way down, and then you had to go back and break down point 2 into point 6 there, but there were 19 points ahead of it, it gets very confusing. Where do I go back to?
Well, but the thing is, when you practice, it's not confusing. When you know what you're doing, you don't have to have all this. I mean, I'm putting this in because you're beginning and I'm trying to teach you how to do it. I don't need that. I can see exactly where all these things are coming from because I know the rules. When you don't know the rules, it's confusing. Mm. Isn't that always the case?
Yeah. I think I have seen the example whereby they would do, say, a dash line from line 1 down to line 4 to show that you're on line 4, you're analysing line
4.
And then another line from line 2 down to line 6. I
find that very confusing, but yes, I've seen that. So instead of doing this, I could draw a line from there to there, and a line from there to there, and I just find that we don't really need more lines.
I think the whole point is, once you've got to that section where on line 5, as you've got it, where S and R are on the right-hand side, you can't do any more with those. I mean, it's not closed. But you can't develop them any further.
That Formula 1 to atomic formulae, to simple formulae.
You can take that no further.
There's no other rule you can apply.
And one side is closed and the other side is still open.
So
now you go and look back at the top and take your next example. Because that's still a part of that possible world.
Well, there's still a possible, that counterexample set.
Yes.
Which is what
you've got, that world is still open. Yeah.
Listen, we're supposed to be finishing now, so do you mind if I move on? Because I don't know what we're doing next. Oh, that's it.
Yeah. A heart attack.
That is it. So that's all right. We can carry on arguing if you like. Okay. So we finished that really complex formula, and I don't mind at all going through another one in the question and answer session and seeing if it becomes clearer.
Just wondering, you know, for those who don't like the style of it, would it help to have 1, 2, and 3, and then 1A, 1B?
Yes, we can. Actually, I used to do this on blackboards, and it was, apart from the fact that blackboards are so ghastly, it's much, much easier to do this on a blackboard. Mm. And if you like, we'll start after the coffee break with doing one on a flip chart, so I can show you just much more quickly how these things happen, because it's a bit difficult. It's not obvious that getting these bloody branches in the right place. Sometimes technology is not a...
Is it simpler to think of the stick as being the end of the road that is the atomic structure? But the branching always leads...
No, because that's not the end of the road, is it? That's
no,
the stick.
But it's the end of that road. Particular road. You said you can't buy any more roads like that.
Well, only because these happen to be simple formulae, they could be complex.
Supposing
this might be P and Q.
If P, then Q.
And S or R or something.
But they're not, are they? I mean,
they're not, but they might be.
Yes, in that case, the stick is
not.
Down.
No, the stick does not signal the end of the road. What signals the end? This is the only thing that signals the end of the road. And that signals the end of the road because we've got a formula and its negation.
So you're saying that a formula could actually be negated and it would actually be proven to be closed. A whole formula.
If there's a formula and its negation, it is closed. Yeah, end of story. There's no if about it. So let me just finish. Okay, we've done that one. A couple of syntactic sequences for you to practice at home, and the answers of those are on page 8, so you can check them. Okay, so those are two to practice at home, and here I'm telling you that all of these are correct, which means that you're in doing them, you know that they should close. So if they don't close when you're finding the answer, you've got something wrong. But I've still got the answers there in the answer booklet. Okay, that's it, folks. And how's that? We're 1 minute over. And in the next session, we can do whatever you like, because it's an hour and a half of...
Thank you.